You're listening to the Business Artist Podcast. I am Jan Melhaus, and today my guest is Birgit Kamps. Birgit is a leadership coach, particular for CEOs. She teaches CEOs how to manage their blind spots. She has an X-ray view to find the blind spots at any CEO and then coaches them to be aware of them and to grow and be more efficient, better, have more life quality, have more quality in their leadership as well. She's a person who could already speak 5 languages by the age of 10. And she's also a podcast called CEO Blind Spots, obviously, which I am listening to often because she interviews CEOs and they give they are very vulnerable in her podcast, I think, because they talk also about their weaknesses, about their challenges. And for me, that is extremely interesting. So Birgit, welcome to the Business Artist Podcast.
Thank you so much, Jan. I appreciate being on your show.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And I think you have a great niche for your podcast, CEOs. And it's very obvious because that's what you're doing with your own company as well. You're the CEO and the owner, founder of your own company. And there you're coaching CEOs. How did you get to this mission, basically?
Well, I wish I could say I was really brilliant and thought it out really well. And but the reality is what I do now is because my clients saw a skill set in me that I didn't realize how valuable it was. My ultimate mission, however, I think I've always had. And, you know, I lived in various countries and I got to see that the quality of leadership made a huge difference in the quality of people's lives. So I've always been interested in, you know, what makes a leader effective and not effective and, you know, having been in different countries. So but, you know, my career started, basically, I did what my parents thought was a smart move. And, my background is in accounting and finance. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, through my career, I just kept being pulled into, you know, team leadership issues. So that's, you know, then I eventually, I'm fast forwarding. So Jan, you'll have to ask me questions if you want more details, but eventually I started, well, I lived the American dream, started my own firm, and it was a staffing firm. Mm-hmm. And we made it to Inc. 500 fastest growing companies, best places to work in Texas, because I was really committed to showing you could make money and treat people well and have a good culture. And then I was surprised late in life with the birth of my daughter. So I was under a 5-year non-compete. But as I mentioned earlier, my clients were like, wow, you're really good at identifying blind spots among executive teams, and you save us so much time because, you know, my clients are all really smart people and eventually they'll figure it out. They just kept saying, hey, we want you to evaluate our team and tell us where is our blind spot because it saves them so much time. And as you know, because you yourself are in business too, and, you know, I know you're really committed to helping entrepreneurs succeed. It's time equals money. And that's, again, I wish I could say I woke up with this brilliant strategy, but, you know, my clients just kept saying, hey, can you help us here? Can you help us there? And eventually that's how I ended up where I am today.
I understand. And can you, I mean, everybody, of course, has heard it. And I think many people think they know what a blind spot is. So do I. But anyway, from the expert, can you tell us what is a blind spot exactly?
Oh, I love your question because actually one of the most common blind spots is assuming we understand each other just because we both speak English. And this is a prime example. So a lot of people will assume they know what a blind spot is. But again, I love your question because it applies in any leadership occasion. A classic one is, I would like you to get back that information to me soon. And the word soon means different things to different people. That's certainly a blind spot. So I'll just use that as an example, right? So in the practical world, we all know when we're driving a car, We've all at some point had to deal with the fact that maybe we have a blind spot in the car, and if we're not careful, we'll hit someone else, or, you know, we'll hurt ourselves by knocking into a wall or something, or a tree. So that's that blind spot. But it, when it comes to CEO blind spots or leadership blind spots, a way to look at it is, if you keep getting frustrated by the results you're getting, chances are there's a blind spot somewhere there. Because again, most leaders, you know, think about, what could I do different? What's my strategy? And a lot of times they're just not aware what they're doing that's causing turnover or that's causing performance issues. And, you know, the classic place where a blind spot might be is what I call the hire fire game. So a lot of CEOs think they're going to fix performance issues by hiring, mm-hmm. and they don't realize that the blind spot might be in a completely different area. For example, not being clear upfront what the expectations are, or not giving feedback. Does that make sense, or would you like me to clarify it differently?
Makes total sense. And I would like to ask, based on that, apart from the hiring and firing, are there other very common blind spots which you see all the time again and again?
Yes, but how long do we have for that? No. The fun part is I've actually identified the top 10 most common blind spots. Wow. And I've got a book coming out about that. And for each letter in blind spot, there is a blind spot. So the top three, well, we'll just take some that recently I've dealt with. So the B in blind spot stands for bus. And what that means is, do you have the right people in the right seats in the right bus, so to speak? Mm-hmm. So you may have someone very talented, but maybe not in the right spot, or you may not be able to hire very well because of the way you interview people. So that is a classic example, right? Is looking to see, reevaluating, by the way, also, because a lot of times when you initially had the right people on the bus, the blind spot may be you used to be a company of 20 people, my case, and all of a sudden you're a company of 40 people. You have to really figure out, are the right people still in the right seats in the bus? Are you effective still at that level? Do you need to be more effective at delegating? So that is one of the most common blind spots. Mm-hmm. So the second one, the L, is language. And we just kind of talked about that. You know, we, a lot of times, just because we speak the same language, we have a blind spot. So people assume English equals English, and it does not. So the example I used earlier, you know, a lot of bosses say, I need this back, or I need it back soon. And a blind spot to a lot of CEOs is that the person hearing it thinks that everything that comes out of a CEO's mouth is a priority. And they get overwhelmed. And if the CEO's not really clear about what they meant by soon or by when they need it back, then the person ends up doing what they think is the priority. Mm-hmm. And again, a lot of CEOs don't realize that people are intimidated to go ask for clarification. So that's another, you know, classic one. And you know, I'll just skip all the way to the last one in blind spots. The S is for succession. So there's, you know, in the old days, a leader's main job was to think through things, plan long-term. But this day and age, we're all going so fast and we're all short on time. And it seems like there's never any time to do succession planning. Mm-hmm. And so, what's happening these days, because a lot of CEOs are under a lot of stress all the time, people are not sleeping as well, and all of a sudden there's a lot of unexpected health issues that put people out of their job, either temporarily or long term, and very few CEOs are preparing for that, including themselves. So but anyway, like I said, I could go on with all the others, but those are some of the keys to look at. Although I do want to say one more, if I may. So it has to do with the other area is, are you setting people up to succeed? And the old days of performance reviews is bankrupt. It's causing so many performance issues. A lot of CEOs wait a year to give a performance review, or, you know, encourage their people to do it once a year. And it's, you know, you basically demoralize 90% of the people who didn't have the above average. Yeah.
Receive it.
Yeah, it is really not an effective thing to do. And a lot of times they don't even think about it, right? It's, that's what they were used to and that's what they're doing, but it's just not effective. Instead, if the people could be, you know, if you can do a do-over on performance reviews and start today and, you know, forgive the past and go, okay, a year from now, what are the top three performance expectations you have of people? Or you can do it by the month and set them up to succeed by giving them frequent feedback intended to help them actually reach their performance goals rather than waiting and you're saying, this is what you didn't do well enough. Mm-hmm. So that is a big one I'm dealing with a lot, because a lot of turnover, involuntary turnover, not, you know, where people quit or where people are frustrated or performance goes down, is because of either complete lack of performance feedback or the negative performance feedback. So I just had to squeeze that one in, because that's a big one that's happening all over the place now.
Yes, absolutely makes sense to me. So when you discover, when you work with the CEO and you discover a blind spot, and let's say the CEO is open to it, to receive it, is it enough to just tell the CEO, okay, that's your blind spot, that's what you should do, and then it works? Or which methodology do you use so it's really not a blind spot anymore in the future, sustainably?
Yes. So the good and the bad of dealing with CEOs, and you know this yourself too, is, you know, in general, they're very smart people. And once they know what the blind spot is, let's just take the last example, you know, performance reviews don't work and this is why. If you explain the why, then once they see it, they start to immediately adjust it. So they see immediate results. Having said that, depending on what their blind spot is, we do have weekly or monthly sessions, if you will, because old habits are hard to break. And you know, I know how to give them feedback in a way that's effective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times you have to engage the leadership team in making the changes. So instead of making it a one-man adjustment show, it's really the executive team working together as one. So frequently I meet with the entire executive team. And, you know, again, the setup is to have everybody succeed rather than to go, aha, caught you in your blind spot. So it's really a program on how to ensure success.
I understand. Good. So I think I have a good picture about this. And I would be very interested to know why you decided to launch your own podcast, and how does it, you know, fit in the whole picture of your coaching with CEOs?
Yes. So it's not, again, I didn't wake up going, hey, I want to start a podcast. But I did wake up in the inquiry of, well, first of all, I mentioned earlier, I was surprised late in life with the birth of my daughter. And my whole life priorities changed after that. I used to be a workaholic, and it just really, and I ended, you know, she's a surprise. I ended up being a single mom, and totally made her my priority, which meant I basically chose to only work from the time I took her to school to the time I picked her up. So very limited time. And that was a paradigm shift for me. Whereas before I would just work, you know, whatever hours were required 7 days a week. And, you know, that's the plus and the minus. If you love what you do, you naturally do it. So it's a double whammy. But anyway, so I've been very limited on my time. So I've been asking myself, how can I serve more people, help more people? Because, you know, it's, I've got limited time and I've got clients, I've got a heavy referral base, and you know, I'm, as opposed to the strategy that a lot of consultants use, which is go after new clients and put a lot of attention on the new clients, I totally place my attention on the clients I have and then their referrals. So having said that, it got to the point where I couldn't help the entrepreneur or a new leader when they needed me, or, you know, my prices were not in line with what they, you know, felt comfortable with. And so I was like, how can I still help others given my limited time? And at the same time, the other thing I was noticing, back to we're all so busy, no one has time to mentor new leaders anymore, or someone who's a leader trying to take it to the next level. And again, in the old days, you would go to a 2-3 day offsite leadership training course, and you know, it was valuable, motivational. You'd go back, and a lot of times there was more room in the schedule to actually execute on those things. But frequently you just go back to, you know, life as normal. Then you have the year-long plans where mentorship, where you meet once a month and it's a year-long. And I've noticed, I participated as one of them and they ended up asking me to be a speaker. But I noticed after the first 3 months, it just became basically a social event. And, you know, in the end, it's all people-related stuff. So I ended up being the one who always was contributing regarding people issues. So I thought, you know what? There's something here. There's a gap in the marketplace for mentorship at all levels. And so I thought podcast, and I'm not the only one who you know, has learned things and can share things and can mentor others. I have a circle of CEOs who could mentor other people, but again, they don't really have the time, and but they do want to contribute. And if I make it easy for them to contribute, they are very willing to. So I thought, then I ran into this program and I was like, let me give that a try. And so here we are. And to my great surprise, it's, you know, I still don't even have all my systems in place for follow-up on the podcast, but I've got plenty of guests, and thankfully, you know, weekly I have some CEO who's willing to contribute, and that included you. So I'm really grateful for you too, because Jan, as you know, I don't go after any CEO on my podcast. It needs to be a high performing CEO who's also willing to be humble and share their struggles. Mm-hmm. And so I'm grateful to know you. So thank you for having been on my show.
but I have to say that is what makes your podcast special, because I think it's a huge value to have somebody who is very successful in the podcast, but talking about their weaknesses, their struggles, their learnings. And if you have somebody who only tells how good he is, you know, I think people, I at least would get bored after some time. But that's what's special about your podcast, to get people who are very successful to show their weaknesses. That's yeah. Why podcasts I love to listen to.
Yeah, thank you. And it's, I mean, the truth is, I don't know about you, Jan, but I only by default became an effective leader, right? I made so many mistakes, and that's what got me there. And I think that's what's missing. A lot of new leaders think you basically wake up and are successful because people don't talk about their struggles along the way. But to me, that's, you know, other than being a parent, that being a leader, developing yourself as a leader is one of the toughest and most rewarding roles I've had.
I agree with you. I mean, I was the oldest of 5 brothers and sisters, so it was kind of a natural thing for me to be in a leadership position, I guess. But then on my way to, I don't know, corporate leadership and then leader of my own company, there were many struggles, many failures, and many things I had to learn, for sure. Mm. Yeah. So it's different. It's a different thing to have the natural ability, maybe, and then to really be an effective leader.
Yes. And in different places, right? Because you and I have both worked in the corporate world and in the entrepreneur world and with different types of clients.
In different countries.
In different countries, exactly. So being an effective leader in one scenario does not equal the same in a different one.
So That's also a very interesting point about you. So you could speak 5 languages by the age of 10. Can you tell me why? And can you also tell me which languages? I'm interested, which languages could you talk?
Sure. So first of all, my parents are Dutch. So I started off speaking Dutch because of my parents. But I was born in Mexico. My dad was working there at the time. So then I learned Spanish. And then they stuck me in a German school. So that was German. So that was my first 3 right off the bat. Then later on, we moved to the Dominican Republic and then Brazil. So when we moved to Brazil is when I learned Portuguese. But that was the first time they switched me from a German school system to an American school system. So I actually learned my English in Brazil part-time. And even though I say, you know, 5 languages, then much later I moved to Texas and they say English, the Texan English is a whole different language. But anyway, so I was 10, you know, by the time I had to learn 5 different languages, and those are the 5.
Incredible. And is would you say today that English is your first language, or is it Dutch, or?
Yeah, you know, I went to university here in Texas, and so I would say yes, English is the language that I do business in, that I study things in. Having said that, you know, I still speak Dutch to my parents. I speak Dutch to my daughter, and so that part, you know, I continue to practice. And then, as you know, I live in Houston now, and there's a large Hispanic population. So my Spanish has stayed fluent, but like any language, right? If you don't practice it, you can, you know, lose it. I understand German perfectly. When I try to talk, Dutch comes out. I understand Portuguese still, but Spanish comes out. So I would say currently the 3 fluent ones are Dutch, Spanish, and English, and Texan.
where did you live in Europe when you worked in Europe?
So I lived actually in Germany, in Dusseldorf, for a little while. My parents moved back to there. So, and then I moved to Holland and pretty much all over the place there, but Zeist is where I ultimately was. And work-wise, I ended up working for a large Swedish company that was quite interesting, because when I moved to Europe, they didn't care about my accounting and finance degrees because it didn't seem to translate. And then I started at the bottom again at that Swedish company in the Netherlands, and was promoted 3 times in 6 months because they thought I was a workaholic, but I never worked weekends. So, and the truth is I got different people to work together, engineers, finance people, all that. And then they put me in charge of the whole McKinsey reorganization efforts. And that taught me, I have to be careful here, at least the same as my college degree in terms of, you know, how to have an organization, you know, work well strategically as well as with people.
So how exactly did you work with McKinsey? You've been in the project where McKinsey was the consultant of the company you worked for? Or?
Exactly. So I worked for a company called Alfa Laval, and they were reorganizing. They chose McKinsey to help them do the reorganization. And then they chose me to be the head liaison. And that's how I got to see how the whole company got restructured. So it was a priceless experience, and I'm very grateful for that. Mm-hmm. Because and then I came back to the States, and then I was like, okay, now I've been out of international tax for a long time, and and then again had to start over. So I signed up with a couple of agencies to find my next job, and one of those agencies, well, they found me. It was a job with a Fortune 500 company, but I'd gotten the taste of what it's like to work with teams and have teams work together. And I kept getting promoted. And originally I wasn't sure why. And then I asked for feedback as to what was specifically the reasons I kept getting promoted. And they said it's because I was really good at having teams work together without having any authority initially. Mm-hmm. And so when this person, this recruiter said, hey, why don't you try being a recruiter? I was like, are you crazy? why would I do that? I mean, I have a college degree, and why would I go into recruiting? But he had an international tax degree and an MBA. And so I was curious enough, and he's like, look, try this. And if you don't like it, you can find yourself the job you really want. And when I found out, you know, he helped people and made more money than most CFOs, I was like, okay, I'll give that a try. And again, I was promoted and received award in the President's Club for my great results. And shortly thereafter, started my own firm.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. I want to go back to the blind spots because when you, maybe a CEO listens to your podcast or listens to you on another podcast or gets a referral and he wants to be coached by you, but he doesn't know or she doesn't know her blind spot, how do you find the blind spot out if the person is not aware of it themselves?
Yeah, so it's funny. It's hardly ever, Jan, that a CEO calls me and says, hey, I want to hire you to discover my blind spot. In fact, I think maybe less than 1% of them come to me that way. Mm-hmm. Usually what happens is they say, hey, Birgit, fix my team. They're not performing. So that's usually how I get a call. And I'm like, sure, well, let's talk. What, you know, and I listen to the CEO and his or her reasons as to why they think the team is not performing according to their wishes or their expectations. Mm-hmm. And through the listening, as I mentioned, I over time I've discovered there's, you know, several buckets where a blind spot could be, and I could identify it. But if they, you know, sometimes it's better to, as I mentioned earlier, to talk with the entire executive team, and it speeds the process up. But just by listening to a CEO talk and asking some questions, I usually have a pretty good sense of where the blind spot is. Now, I will also say I scored top 1% of the nation in what they call spatial relations. So I can see, I can spot patterns quickly. So I think that's to my advantage. I've taken some tests and I'm an extreme intuitive person. I think that's my advantage. But the process behind it really is just listening to see what they think the problem is, asking questions. Like, for example, here's another recent case is, you know, people, these young kids, they don't work. They don't have the work ethic, you know, generation X, Y, Z. And I'm not saying that's not true, right? There are cases where blaming the millennials for lack of performance might have some validity. Saying that their work ethic is different might have some validity. But a lot of the times, it has nothing to do with the other person's situation. It has to do with the CEO themselves assuming they've been clear about what they want, or assuming that others understand priorities. And here was one of mine, or assuming that just because they have an open door, that people feel comfortable coming in and talking to them. In fact, I had another CEO on my show just yesterday, and he was surprised when one of his managers stomped off and left and told him that he was the worst manager to work for. And he was absolutely shocked because no one had ever told him that before. In fact, he thought he was a really good leader. And then at first it was like, you know, when that happens, the tendency is to get defensive and go, that's just that one person. But then if there's a pattern of turnover, you got to ask yourself, you know, maybe people are not telling me things because they're afraid of me. Or, you know, the classic is they don't want to lose their jobs, so they don't want to risk telling the CEO that something that they're doing is not working. And you know, and if I go in and tell a CEO, this is what's wrong with you, that's what's wrong with you, I wouldn't have any clients. I mean, that's the easy part. I think we've all heard that there's no statue for critics, right? But it's, I know that the CEO's committed to great things, and they're not meaning to be a terrible leader. They really just have a blind spot. And so I'm interested in setting up the CEO to succeed, because my mission is to enhance the quality of people's lives by enhancing the quality of leadership. And, you know, it's not easy to be a CEO, as you know. You have to go through a lot in life. So I get a CEO's ultimate commitment. And so I think they know when I'm in the process of identifying the blind spot, it's for their benefit. It's not to say, ha, gotcha.
But how do you do this? It's still, even if it's for their benefit, they ask you, my team is not performing. You say, okay, I look at the team. And then you say, yeah, your team, but, you know, I discovered something.
Yes, and that's the art part. But here's, to answer your question, before I even go there, I ask them what their vision is, what their mission is, what mm-hmm. their values are. Mm-hmm. Most of them have it. And if they don't, I basically make them think about what they're ultimately committed to, first of all. Mm-hmm. And what, you know, how will they know a year from now that the team is performing according to their expectations? So I first start by finding out what they're actually committed to. And then when I identify the blind spot, I'll say along the lines of, you know, hey, I know you said you were committed to X, Y, and Z. And yes, there are some issues with your people. They could do this better and this better. I just wonder, though, when is the last time you've asked them for feedback about what works about your leadership style and what doesn't work about your leadership style? Because if, you know, if you're committed to this, whether or not you fire them or hire another one, there's a pattern here of turnover, or there's a pattern here of people perform really well for the first 3 months and then they drop off and then the performance goes down. So when there's a pattern, as a CEO, you know that you are ultimately responsible for everything. Not that it's the truth, but it's a commitment. Mm-hmm. So are you willing to look at yourself first before we look at what the problems are of everybody else? Because that you are the biggest needle mover in the organization, because you're the only one who really knows what the vision and mission is of this company. So I tie in, you know, how this helps them with what they say is important, which is the truth, right? I mean, if they're not connected to bigger vision beyond themselves, they would not be interested in feedback about them. But most of my CEOs are so committed to something much bigger beyond themselves that when they're aware of their bigger picture, they can receive feedback fairly effectively.
I understand. Yeah, so that's the beauty about CEOs.
Yes. I feel very grateful that I get to work with so many of them. And like I said, I'm looking, exploring ways how I can serve even more, especially nowadays, right? A lot of people are starting their own companies. And I don't know about in your country or where you've lived, Jan, but in the States, oof, they said the success ratio is very small for for CEOs who actually make it. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, of course, here too, it's the same. It's almost like for startups, 1 out of 10 successful or something, right?
Yeah.
But in terms of how to serve more people, so now you're doing it for quite some time that you coach the one-on-one CEOs and then and their teams as well. But obviously, you're selling basically your time because you can't double or triple yourself. But now you launched your podcast, so of course there's an unlimited number of people who can listen and get knowledge, get help through the podcast interviews. But will you be looking into other methods, systems, technologies to serve more CEOs, to like scale yourself basically?
Yes. So that was one of my blind spots. It's no longer a blind spot, but it's certainly still a challenge, which is, you know, how do I use systems? Like, do I, you know, put together an online course to help people that doesn't require my presence? That's one thing I'm looking at right now in designing. And what I'm about to launch is a small, I call it a mastermind, but it's really a group of, you know, 5 to 10 CEOs that I will select to work together with at the same time. What I discovered when I took this course, you know, to how to do a podcast is it was actually very beneficial to be with other leaders and hear and support each other. So I think that's something that's big that's missing. So even my one-on-one, you know, I'm their main support system. And I think it's very valuable in this day and age that, you know, it's lonely at the top. So having 5 or 10 people where you can still keep it confidential enough, because that's obviously the biggest concern to my clients, where it's still small enough to keep it confidential, however you can support each other. That's what's next for me. And as I mentioned, I've got a book coming out also with the intention to serve. And even though, Jan, I mostly focus on one-on-ones, the other thing that I've been doing for a while now, and again, I don't publicly say all this because a lot of what I do is confidential, but I also evaluate executives, including CEOs, for private equity firms and, you know, board members. So those are, you know, sometimes it's a group of 3 to 5 people, executives, that I evaluate before a private equity firm decides to invest millions of dollars in them. That one, I have no idea how I can, you know, multiply myself in, because that is that unique, you know, skill set. But some basics regarding, you know, how to hire people effectively, how to fire them effectively, how to, you know, communicate in a way that performance goes up. You know, there's some basics that I can put systems around and a course around. So that's really what's next for me. And yeah. And I'm watching you too, because you are much better than I am with systems. So I appreciate being in connection with you as well. Right. Cause I think, you know, you've supported me, and I look forward to supporting you however I can too.
Thank you. Me too. In the future, again, of course, whenever needed and whenever I can do it. You said something very interesting, though. Could you maybe tell us 2-3 things you look at first when you evaluate CEOs for private equity firms?
Yes. So the starting point is always finding out from the private equity firms or the board members, you know, what their desired outcome is. So in private equity world, it's a lot easier because they have what's called term sheets, you know, so they want them to execute on this patent, or they want them to, you know, get this launched and sold within 3 years, or whatever the desired outcome is. I make sure that everybody who's putting their money in is on the same page with that, because even though, again, English does not equal English. So my starting point is, yeah, here's a document and you think you're clear, but now let's all talk and make sure that what are the top 3 priorities and what can you live without? So the starting point is them and the desired outcome, making sure everybody's on the same page, everybody's clear. Then I reverse engineer my questions accordingly. Now, a lot of private equity firms say I'm their insurance policy, because what happens is a lot of times they'll have hired a international search firm to find them their next CEO, and or they come already a group of people pitching them with the job. But the thing is, I go in there and I reverse engineer my questions to the desired outcome that my client wants, because a lot of times they lose millions because they invest in a CEO that was a Fortune 500 CEO and can't make the transition into an entrepreneur environment where they have to take out their own trash and they don't have a, you know, they don't have a support staff of, you know, 10. So there are basic questions.
Or is it the other way around? If somebody is has worked in an entrepreneurial environment and then has to work for a Fortune 500 company.
Yeah, just as tough, depending on the desired results, right? So, and that's a great question. And that's a question not a lot of people ask, right? They, here's the biggest mistake people make when they're investing in executives or selecting an executive. They look at, okay, they have a MBA from, you know, an Ivy League school. They have had this type of experience. In other words, they focus on only the individual. And then even if they're a great individual, but they may not be a perfect fit for what you need right now. And so people get seduced by the individual, whatever they had or whatever, but completely forget that they need to make sure in this phase of the business, is this individual a fit? And so I just reverse engineer all my questions. But and a big one also is ego, right? I listen for, you know, are they willing to be humble? Because it's in this day and age, and it's funny, I can say this, I just can't name any names, but there was an individual that, so this private equity firm had given the search firm a job description. And one of the things they said is they want a humble CEO, because we had talked about that, but the search firm had told the CEO that. And I swear to you, Jan, in the first 30 minutes, the CEO said at least 20 times how he is very humble. And I'm like, okay, if you're humble, you don't exactly have to announce it 20 times in the first half hour, right? So really, if you just listen based on what the desired outcome is and create a, I call it suspend judgment. Don't judge too soon. Try to really listen to what's being said. Try to really figure out, is it a match? And then do the judging, because people can read, especially, you know, again, CEOs are smart. They'll read your body language. So I try very hard to keep myself in neutral and keep myself just focused on what's actually being said rather than my opinion of what's being said. And then I check references, and I know how to get references to talk, which, you know, a lot of people don't. So did that answer your question? Yeah.
Answer my question, and also have another question based on that one.
Yes.
So in the year 2020 and the future, the foreseeable future, so I think humbleness is obviously one. What do you think are the top 3 to 5 characteristics, key characteristics and key strength CEO should have?
You said the other one or five?
Apart from humbleness,
yeah.
Other 3, 4, 5 characteristics or strength a CEO should have?
Yeah, so definitely flexibility. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, sometimes it's interesting. In the past, CEOs became CEOs because of their expertise, and they were right about a position they took, the strategy, in other words. But things are changing so fast these days that, you know, a CEO has to be willing to be flexible and look and see, hey, what used to work may not work anymore. And so, you know, flexibility, and I'm trying not to use the word humble, but you'll start to see a pattern. Really, without humility, you can't be flexible. You also can't be in inquiry mode. I think asking feedback from the team regarding what they see as opportunities or what they see as challenges, rather than assuming that the CEO already knows all that, is going to be key. So really becoming more of a co-creator and a collaborator with teams, I think, is another really important skill set. And really, it's probably more of a way of being that's going to be required in this new century. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Another thing is, when you're a CEO, how are you developing people? You know, in the past, they would have courses on that, or they would spend one-on-one time with them. But it's, you know, people, it used to be in the old days, people were loyal for 20 years because the company would take care of them. And then it became, you know, when I had my staffing firm, I could see this average stay was 7 years. Now it's like 3 years. And that's very costly to a company. And a lot of CEOs are not aware of the energy, you know, it costs energy, it costs morale, it costs productivity. But really, you know, looking to see what kind of culture are they creating. And in the past, you know, a lot of effort was put into, like I said, leadership development programs, and almost no company has that anymore. So I think it's going to require a leader really to look at, you know, how am I going to keep my people and how am I going to develop my people in a way that works. And so I track the top five reasons people stay and go. And, you know, you, again, the danger is assuming you know what I mean, but when people leave, making sure that you're asking why are they leaving. And the five reasons people stay and go, one of them is leadership style. The other one is growth opportunity upwards. In other words, can I get your job? But the other reason is growth opportunity sideways. In other words, I'm tired of being a tax person. I'm going to be an audit person, or I'm tired of being a finance guy. I want to be a commercial guy or girl. And then the fourth one is work-life balance. And then the fifth one is tough to do something about, but it's location. Mm-hmm. So if you're a company, and here I'm going to parlay to my last one, is as a CEO, you have to look and see what are you willing to do in terms of remote workers, because that's becoming a huge opportunity and a challenge for CEOs. I had to face that myself as well, because Houston is sprawled out and it can be an hour and traffic has gotten worse. And so I had to deal with that too. So you really have to look at a CEO. What are your policies about remote workers and, you know, and location, and how are you going to secure your company? I myself have to admit, I have not done anything about this yet, but I could predict that this is, and I'll end with this one. As a CEO, you now also have to look at cybersecurity and data security. You know, a friend of mine is really helping a lot of CEOs who were not prepared for that. Mm-hmm. And it has really cost them millions of dollars by not being prepared.
Very interesting. Yes, Birgit, that was a great talk with you. Amazing insights, which you don't get easily anywhere, I think. So it's great to have you here as an expert. And I would like to ask you if people are interested, if they want to find out more about you, where can they find you on the net? How can they find your podcast? And yeah, if you would tell us the destinations, that would be great.
Okay, sure. So LinkedIn, I think, is an easy way to find me. But CEOblindspots.com, if they're interested in finding out what the 10 most common blind spots are, that would be where they could, you know, request that. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, you know, every week I have a new podcast out, and I usually mention in there that they can email me at ceoblindspots@gmail.com.
Perfect. I will put the LinkedIn link as well in the notes of the podcast. And exactly. The last thing I wanted to ask you is, when is your book out?
You're going to ask me by when. So I had no idea that it's like birthing a baby, this book. So I thought it was going to be done, you know, a while back. And it is now, to answer your question, in the editing phase. So probably about two more months. And I say probably. I'm going to, like with anything else I do now, is ask feedback from some existing clients before I finally, you know, launch it. Because the commitment is that it's going to add value, not just that I have a book with my name on it. And I forgot to say, so you asked me earlier about how they can reach me. So even though I've got the CEO blind spots, my clients, when they look at me on LinkedIn, it's Hire Universe, but it's a play on words. It's HIRE. And so that'll be in LinkedIn and via my Hire Universe companies, how that book will be published. But hopefully 2 months.
Okay. I look forward to that. And it was great to have you here. I hope we do that again in the future when we have news to tell to the people. And if anybody is interested to book a call with me, you can also do that on my website, janmelhose.com, JanMehlhose.com. You can book the call there. We do a 15-minute call. You tell me your case, basically. I listen to it and give you my advice. Birgit, thanks again for being on the podcast. Have a great day and
talk to you soon. My pleasure. Yes, thank you, Jan.
Bye-bye.
Bye.